Up next, I decided today was a good day to look into agriculture. It is the local economy week within our election coverage. And as everyone kind of knows, agriculture is a huge part of that. So I decided to speak to two different people, perhaps you could say on opposing sides of the coin. However, both advocating for innovation and progress within our agricultural industry in response to a whole heap of things, namely climate change and space and how we use space within Aotearoa. So first of all, I spoke to Mark Ross of AgCalm, who are a New Zealand-based business, or kind of umbrella, who look into pesticides use and wellness of agricultural components, be that plants and or animals, as well as speaking to Sarah Smuts-Kennedy. However, I will leave you with Mark Ross and come back and introduce Sarah's kind of different view on the issue. So I started by asking Mark essentially what innovation in agriculture means for both himself and AgCalm.
So what we're talking about at the moment, we've got a situation, especially with COVID-19 restrictions. We're challenged with growing more food, with less space and land. We're also challenged with reducing our greenhouse gas emissions and protecting the environment to produce safe food. So when we're looking at innovation, we're looking at new technologies that we can bring into the economy, into the agricultural sector, which will allow us to actually do that, to actually grow more food safer and to also protect the environment. So we might be talking about gene editing technologies, robotic technologies, or just practices that are happening overseas that we see could work well in New Zealand.
Are there any reasons in particular that perhaps these practices don't exist in New Zealand already?
Yeah, no, look, when we're talking about gene editing, there's examples where this can be useful for animal vaccines and changing the gut bacteria of animals to reduce greenhouse gases, for example. The legislation won't allow us to actually bring those technologies into New Zealand. It's very, very restrictive. So companies don't want to invest the money to actually trial those products, to actually show the evidence that they will be useful to New Zealand, and they're not harmful. So we need to rely on the science and the evidence on those products.
With a lot of those practices, come a few ethical questions. How do you see kind of finding a middle ground between kind of future best practice and moral best practice?
Sure, and that's the big challenge here. You're going to be reducing the risks, so environmental risks and biosecurity risks and market risks, but the social side of it is the most difficult to mitigate, is a debate with the public. So we feel that there's the option of iwi, of government, of industry, all sitting down and talking and working through this together. We haven't done this for a very long time, and people are scared to actually have this discussion. But looking forward, it is something that we need to do as a country.
And in those conversations, you mentioned it before, greenhouse gases are a large concern, I guess, when it comes to discussing agriculture. And agriculture has come under quite a lot of fire for its part in the climate crisis. With those innovations, what innovations would you like to see within New Zealand around kind of moving to a more climate positive future?
Oh, no, for sure. Like, I just mentioned gene editing before. Like, there is an example, evidence to show that this can decrease carbon dioxide emissions of 26 million tonnes by using this technology, which is equivalent to taking 12 million cars off the road. This is on a global basis. So that's one example. Another example would be drought-resistant grasses. So these have been developed in New Zealand, but unfortunately, due to our legislation, trial work's taking place overseas, and it's where we can actually bring those drought-resistant grasses into New Zealand, and they would have beneficial climate change mitigation benefits to New Zealand and to our environment. So, yeah, it's just looking more into this, and once again, the legislation there, our various acts prevent us actually bringing that technology into New Zealand.
What would you like to see be done to those policies? How do we rewrite those acts so that we bring innovation onshore, but also don't bring kind of bad practice or unsure practice onshore at the same time?
Look, we don't want to bring products or bring tools into New Zealand that potentially can harm the environment or people. We're very conscious of that. So we've got to base legislation on risks, looking at risks. So how can we manage that risk? We've got a product. Do we put barriers around its use, or do you only use it in certain situations? But on the legislation front, we just feel they need to be upgraded. It's pretty wide sweeping when we say that. The key act being the Hazardous Substance and New Organisms Act, which manages new products coming into New Zealand and trial work around those. So that is one that definitely needs a look into, and that's where a combined group, a working group, could look into that and make recommendations to the government, and they could be discussed and taken forward. But, you know, we need to base it all on risk and all on science.
I'm aware that the Opportunities Party are quite keen on this idea of gene editing and genetic modifications. And feel free, you don't have to answer this one. Is there any other, or are there any other political parties at the moment that you see progressing with the changes to agricultural legislation that AgCalm would like to see?
Yes, there are. Look, we've met with the National Party, the spokesperson on research, science, technology, Dr. Panji Tama, and they are very keen to have this debate and progress changes to the legislation on the biotech front. She's put out a manifesto or information on this, and has told us this would be one of the policies National will potentially put in place in the first 100 days. I was listening to ACT Party leader David Seymour the other day, and he said that the ACT Party would encourage and look into genetic modification as well. So the two key parties there. Labor we've talked to, not so keen, probably happy to have the discussion, but a little bit reluctant to take it forward, whereas the Greens are very anti-genetic modification and genetic technologies, and we respect their view.
As far as the other innovations that you'd like to see, does that pattern kind of persist?
The passion persisting for other innovations does, for sure. We things like new products, greener technology, greener pesticides, more, friendly to the environment and to the human population. And we're still getting hampered in trying to test those in New Zealand. It's a very restrictive process to get permission to do trials in New Zealand for new pesticides. So that's a passion we're pushing as well. Also robotic technology when it comes to use of drones to monitor farms or to spray orchards, or also to harvest fruit, robots to harvest fruit. There's a lot of technology we could use, and we're just not embracing it at the moment.
Indeed, that was Mark Ross of, let me get this right, AgCalm. There we go. I've been mispronouncing it all morning. Up next we have Sarah Smuts-Kennedy of For the Love of Bees. So perhaps you could label Mark Ross's views as a more traditional approach, or be that a progressive traditional approach to agriculture. We don't endorse necessarily any of the voting patterns suggested, and that goes for the same for the next piece. However, these are informative pieces for people who want an opinion or have an opinion on agriculture to direct them into the right lanes in the upcoming election, that is. So I started by asking Sarah Smuts-Kennedy, I guess, what the place of agriculture is for her in the upcoming election.
Well, we're really, really lucky that the Green Party have actually just very, in the last week have pulled it front and centre, which is exactly where it needs to be, because while we're trying to attend to climate change, which is primarily about there being too much carbon in the atmosphere, most of the focus is around reducing emissions, but there is already too much carbon in the atmosphere. So we really need to be pulling front and centre practices that can get that carbon out of the atmosphere and back into the soil. The problem is that the systems that conventional agriculture and even sometimes organic agriculture are using are actually exacerbating that. They aren't actually contributing. The food that we're eating, it's really simple just to think, the food that we eat is either repairing or damaging the ecosystem. And that's just the truth of it. So we need to be looking at shifting as quickly as possible into the systems that are actually improving the system.
Indeed. So we just spoke to Mark Ross of AgCalm, and he noted that perhaps one of the issues with regenerative agriculture, what's branded as regenerative agriculture, is it can't be commercialized to take the place of what we would traditionally label commercial agriculture at the moment. Do you see there being a path for something like regenerative agriculture to take up the place of a kind of standardized agriculture in the future?
I find that statement deeply perplexing, and I guess I would say that somebody who has something to gain from continuing conventional practices, I would say, and there are plenty of enterprises globally where regenerative agriculture is being used at a very high scale. And this is regenerative agriculture, and I would also, I want to specifically say organic regenerative agriculture has been tested, practiced globally by people for decades and decades. It's not new. The practices are very simple to transition across to at scale, but it does need a will. And I think the biggest barrier to that transition is a mindset.
Right.
And that's not just the mindset of a farmer, but it's also the mindset of the people around the farmers who support them. There is a lot of money to be made in actually selling pesticides, fertilizers, fungicides, insecticides, essentially. Those supports that you need to use on a farm when that system isn't self-sustaining. And of course, even as a regenerative practitioner, agriculturalist, you are going to need to buy things, but you're just transitioning across to buying different supports, which are actually made up of microbial and mineral supports, essentially. So you're introducing biology to support biology, and every time you take an action in your farm, you're actually improving the ecosystem.
Right.
You're improving systems, and that has massive benefits on healthy waterways.
So yeah. We can see urban farms especially, which are perhaps are an example of non-conventional agriculture, appear in local government plans and propositions. On a central government scale, how do we transition to those if we want to, and what would it take for New Zealand policy-wise and practically to adopt such practices?
In terms of council, there's still big shifts to be made at a regional and at a council level. I am I'm obviously the vision holder of a project called For the Love of Bees, and one of our big projects that we've been working on for a time is urban regenerative, organic regenerative farming in urban centres. We have our hero site at the top of Simon Street, 310 square metres, where we have for the last 2 years been proving that you can grow at a scale commercial, that is done entirely without any synthetic inputs. So it is entirely organic regenerative. And we now, on 310 square metres of garden beds, are actually producing enough income to pay not quite two full-time equivalent incomes. So that's a massively productive site. And we have created the Urban Farmers Alliance, which is now supporting over 120 urban farms and compost hubs around New Zealand. Now, KaiCycle, an organisation in Wellington where we're really proactive and collaborating and partnering with, and both of us are working really hard, both in Wellington and in Auckland, to get our councils to come on board with supporting urban farming. And that has a huge amount of benefits, right, from food security, local jobs, as well as local ecosystem restoration. They also function as really site demonstration hubs where people can come and actually see these organic regenerative practices in place and start to actually open their minds, change their mindset to the possibility that this is in fact going to be the new normal, and it really has to be the new normal. We are also applying for funding, and so just to give credit to Auckland Council, they have implemented urban farming as a strategy in the long-term plan, and councils at the moment, we're in conversation at the moment with the Waitemata Local Board for looking at how we can actually introduce some large-scale, so the 2,500 to 5,000 square metre farms, which have capacity to feed up to 400 families a week off those sites and actually create jobs for between, you know, 8 to 15 individuals on those sites. And there's just farmers. And there are people who want to farm. We just advertised one new role on our OMG site, and on one Instagram post we had 44 applications of a very high quality, about 80% of them women under 30. So there is a real will for this to change, but I would have to say that there are two issues with the regenerative agricultural space at the moment, in that you know, it's really wonderful that government get in behind that. We need the MPI, we need Ministry for Environment to be actually coming in behind projects like ours and early adopter farmers and actually supporting them financially to actually do the seed funding to really kickstart these projects at a scale that people can then buy in and get confident that, yeah, these processes are massively financially viable. And in fact, they're more productive, have greater yields, better high yields than conventional farming. The proof is out there. That's not something that we need to prove any longer is possible. But it's getting around the mindset and also making sure that the organisations and individuals who still have money to be made out of slowing that transition down, encouraging them to start thinking much more in an imaginative way about, well, how can I grow my business now by actually upskilling, creating a pathway for the new normal agriculture, which is going to be organic regenerative. How can I actually create a business opportunity for myself out of that? But I said a real concern with regenerative, the terminology regenerative at the moment, it's being bandied about at a great rate, like a lot of these sort of climate change gold rush areas. We have a real concern. One of the kind of big things about regenerative agriculture that people need to understand is that it's primarily about stopping tilling soil. It's about leaving that soil barren without any plants in it for periods of time. And it's about using anything on that soil that might kill microbiology, specifically fungal networks, which are one of the soil microbial communities that actually really help restore and make those soils you know, great for growing plants in. And the things that kill those things very quickly are synthetic fertilizers, herbicides, so the glyphosate issue that we're talking about in Auckland at the moment, insecticides and pesticides. And you only need to use synthetic fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides when your soils are degraded.
If people want to support this kind of, or this model of agriculture, is there a direction for them to vote in the upcoming election?
Well, I think, you know, you really have to be voting green. However, green are going to need the support of Labor.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.